throat. I had hoped to find your people under less desperate circumstances, but I thank you for turning the tide of this confrontation. I offer my deep regret for the bloodshed on your land, and I hope you may be willing to assist us further. We know who you are. The tall woman's voice was both soft and authoritative. One amongst us has followed your journey. Your loss saddens us. She glanced at Pavale, at the fallen wolf, at the bodies strewn around the clearing. We will assist you to reach our home, the place you call the Hermit. Practical matters first. You are hungry, thirsty, weary, sad, and... With your permission, Alex said, we should lay the dead to rest, our own and those who have been drawn into this, because their orders demanded it, and one other. Rihard was gone. He should have lived long enough to answer for his crimes. He should have suffered more. No, it was wrong to think that way. Lucas had spoken with wisdom and balance. He had astonished Alex with the precision of his act and the power of his quiet words. The goat boy was far more of a man than he had ever realized. Worthy of Stasia, his treacherous thoughts whispered. The forest folk moved then, to walk among the still forms of the dead and to murmur soft words over each. They did not gather them up. The woman spoke again. This must be done, yes, or the place will forever bear the shadow of what happened here. But not yet. There are wounded among you. You are exhausted and full of sorrow. Come a little way with us. We will provide refreshment and attend to your hurts. And when Alex glanced around him, troubled at the thought of leaving the scene of death unguarded, one of the forest men said, We will set a watch on the place. Nothing will be touched until you are ready. He could not bring himself to ask the question, not even when they had been escorted to a grassy bank beside a stream, assisted to settle themselves, and offered food and drink from baskets carried by the uncanny folk. He remembered old stories about the dangers of accepting such food, such as the possibility of being trapped in another realm forever, or somehow irrevocably changed. But if they were now to walk on to the Hermit, he and his comrades must be prepared to trust. He wanted to ask, Is there a human man among your number? A man who was lost in these parts as a child years ago? Is the true heir to the rulership with you at the Hermit? But it was not yet time for that. Havel had died because of him. Mattis was hurt. Lucas was hurt. Stasia looked utterly drained. He wanted to sit down with her, just the two of them, and try to offer some comfort. To let her talk, to be a listening ear. But not here, with all these folk around, quiet as they were. Besides, Flip had reappeared, and was now in dog form again, sitting beside Stasia, apparently quite calm. He guessed she had been the one who'd startled Rihard and allowed Stasia to escape. As for this peaceful spot, so unlike the terrain they had passed through, he wondered if it had been conjured from nowhere for the purpose of giving weary travellers respite. The tall woman came to seat herself by him on the grass, while others of her folk tended quietly to his comrades' injuries, both old and new. He realized there were questions he could ask, safer ones. Best start with the formalities. Might I know your name? I am known as Kadri. I am a leader among my people. Mistress Kadri, you mentioned that one among you had followed our journey, he said. In his mind was the crone of Stasia's visions, a person she believed to be at the Hermit. Could visions go both ways? You knew we were coming here, and who we were. You rescued us just in time, and I will be forever grateful for that. He would not ask why, if they had been somehow watching his team's progress, these folk had not intervened earlier, when some lives might still have been saved. Did you know the purpose of our venture? The woman smiled. Her eyes were most certainly not human, for they seemed full of light. Do not the tales tell of a quest for treasure? Treasure can mean many different things, Alexis said carefully. To some gold and jewels, to others the ancient trees of the forest. It might be amber, and amber may be valued for different reasons, or the treasure might be a man or woman. The woman nodded. Indeed, Master Alexis, I see you have learned much on this journey, more perhaps than you would have learned had you stayed at court. Carolus was coaxing Stasia to eat some of the fruit the folk had provided, to drink from a cup carved of wood. Her hair was damp and flowed loose across her shoulders, for one of the women had taken her to the stream to wash away the blood and grime, and the thick braid of the journey had been unfastened. Now she wore borrowed clothing of the same green as the garments of the forest folk. She managed to smile. It was a wan memory of the way she had looked when she told a story by the fire. We still have quite a way to walk, I think. Two of my companions carry serious injuries, Alexis said. All of us sustained hurts when we were attacked, and Stasia is distressed. It is not her way to wield a weapon in combat. And the wolf, you may find the long way shorter under our guidance, Master Alexis. As for your companions, they all need time to heal, time to recover. You also. When we reach the hermit, we can provide that. And learning. She left him then, going off to join a group of her own people. And Mattis came over, his old sling replaced by a neat new one. He lowered himself awkwardly to sit beside Alexis. Popper Vale, he said. I saw him talking to you at the end. Did he tell you how he came to be there? He'd remember those faltering words forever. The ruler had come to doubt my loyalty. She ordered Pavel to watch my movements closely and report back. The night when we left Dragon's Keep, he could have alerted her, but he came with us instead, intending to tell me everything. He meant to come all the way with us, but when we sent him to Hartwood on his own, he met two men he knew among Rihard's guards not far from the settlement. He had a cover story, and it seemed they believed it, but they also shared some terrible accounts of what Rihard had been doing to men who disobeyed his orders, acts of cruelty toward their loved ones in particular. Pavel came on with us, but fear for his wife and son eventually overwhelmed him, and he headed back on his own, hoping to get them out of Dragon's Keep and disappear somewhere. He was apprehended by Rihard's men near Clearwater and taken to the settlement to explain himself. Again, his family was threatened if he refused to lead the commander up the mountain. Perhaps they were luckier with the weather than we were. They must have made remarkably good time. The mountain may have played a part in that. Maybe these folk will have some answers. They sat in silence a while. Then Alex said, Pavel asked me to get his wife and son to safety, but Elisabetta has no cause to harm them while we're still away from court. She knows nothing of what has happened. Rihard wouldn't have advised her of what he was intending. He always did like to go his own way. He'd have wanted to find the treasure first, then report triumphantly back to her. A request from a dying comrade could not be ignored, but so much was unknown. Solutions suggested themselves, but all seemed fraught with peril. Leia might be able to do something about Pavale's family, Mattis said. That's if I can get a message to her. Mattis seldom spoke of his wife's name in company, and only ever in a secure place, among trusted friends. We must wait and see what unfolds here first, Alex said. Leia shouldn't visit Dragon's Keep in person, but she might be able to send someone unobtrusive, someone who can get Pavel's wife and child out on a pretext. He did not add, if they are still alive. Master Alexis? A man of the forest folk, clad in a nut-brown robe and wearing a friendly smile, had come over to address them. My name is Yuho. We have clean garments to offer you. Alex glanced over at Stasia. Her shoulders were tense, arms were tight around her drawn-up knees. He could imagine what havoc the fight must have created in her mind. He wanted to keep her in sight, to watch over her. But the next task would be laying the dead to rest, and to do so while filthy, blood-stained and unkempt would be deeply disrespectful. Thank you. I will. The cold embrace of the stream was welcome. With Yuho's assistance, he scrubbed away the worst of the dirt, shaved off his unruly beard, and accepted the garments offered him. Plain, comfortable items in the green and brown of the forest folk. He kept his belt, but surrendered his weapons, which he was assured would be cleaned and returned to him, as would his travel-worn clothing. The forest folk had made no attempt to inspect the contents of the traveller's packs. Whatever it was they had known of this expedition, it had apparently resulted in a significant degree of trust. Or had their ability to fight won them that? He made sure to thank Yuho for his assistance, and the man acknowledged this with a grave smile. You'll want time to talk with your companions, Yuho said. Then we will do what must be done, with due respect. We are hoping to reach the hermit before nightfall. Surely it's too far away to be reached so quickly. Perhaps. Let us see how things unfold, Master Alexis. In this realm, distances can be deceptive. We will not push you too hard. You have already endured much. Yuho, the wolf too should be laid to rest. I'm not sure how that should best be done. Yuho nodded, understanding. She who called the wolves will have the answer. Give her a little longer, then ask her. By the time he got back to Stasia, Lucas was sitting beside her. He had a hand on her shoulder, as if for comfort. Stasia was talking and gesturing while he listened with grave attention. Alex could see she had been crying. It was clear his own presence was not required. He walked past them, dipping his head in acknowledgement, but saying nothing. He squashed down the feelings that rose in him. They were inappropriate, unworthy of someone who was supposed to be a leader. What mattered was the hermit and the story of Marcus, whatever it was. If Yuho was right about how soon they could reach the place, he might have his answer this very day. 45. Stasia. At the time it seemed fragmented, dreamlike, though the feelings that coursed through her were entirely real and painful. The forest folk moved with the quiet of wild creatures and the grace of dancers, even when digging graves and carrying the blood-stained corpses of the fallen to their resting places. For Rihard's guards, the words to be spoken were simple enough. All were known by name to one or other of the team, and the men took turns to speak, each offering a brief but compassionate statement about the one being laid in the earth. These had not been evil men, simply folk doing the job they were required to do. It was their misfortune to find themselves under the commander's leadership. She found herself shedding tears for each and sending a silent message to the wives and sweethearts, the children, the bereaved parents, the brothers and sisters, who might never know what had befallen their loved one. And she asked the forest to receive them kindly, to let their bodies become part of the rich soil that sustained life here. Through that magic, these men would live on in a place of peace and beauty. Their stories would be woven into the long tale of Hartwood. They would witness the passing years as the ancient trees did. They laid Pavel to rest with prayer and song. Mattis spoke. He was a friend, a brother, a comrade in arms. He was a husband and father. His little son is called Tarvo, and his wife is Hannah. As he took his last breath, he thought of them. May he walk in the light now. May he find peace. It was Alexis who stood by the commander's grave. There was a look on his face that Stasi had never seen before. Whether it was fury or grief or sheer exhaustion, she could not tell. He stood there in silence for a while, as if lost for words. But this was the ruler's senior advisor, someone whose duties included finding the right words for any occasion. She wanted to go and stand beside him, to take his hand as one might to reassure a frightened child. But she held back, and eventually he spoke. This was a man whose past errors haunted him, whose failures governed his decisions. I will not dwell on his faults. He is gone now. The words Lucas spoke at this man's death were wise and compassionate. May you find forgiveness in the afterlife. And I will add, may the embrace of the forest, the songs of birds, the sound of rippling water, the passage of sun and moon across the sky grant you peace. Stasia had not believed him capable of such a speech. This was a man of power games and intrigues, of planning and calculation. And yet, she would be a fool to think the journey had not changed him profoundly. Just how much she had not realized until now. Alex had asked her about burying the wolf, how it should be done and where. She had spoken to Mistress Kadri again, wanting her agreement. And she had asked Flip, showing her different pictures of how it might be. In the end, they carried the corpse some distance from the spot where the creature had fallen, and only a few of them came to bear witness, Stasia and Lucas, Alexis and representatives of the forest folk, Kadri, the man named Juho, and two others, and Flip, who had become an unusually small raven. They laid out the body beside the grave, with a green cloth covering the wound that had killed him. Ready? Stasia asked, and the others nodded or murmured yes. The wolves were not far away. She could feel their presence, a risk, certainly. She opened her mind to them, tried to convey that this was a ritual of farewell, of gratitude, of sorrow and recognition. And after a long time, or so it felt, there came a mind picture in return, the pack moving close under the trees, but not too close, waiting in the shadows, watching. Her eyes were shut, but she knew from the small sounds made by her companions that the wolves were present, not only in her mind, but also in physical form. She opened her eyes, looked down at their fallen leader, and began her story. Once upon a time, a tribe of wolves lived in Hartwood Forest, up in the higher reaches, where few human folk walked. It was the realm of the forest folk, and of many kinds of creatures. On a spring night, when the woods were alive with the calls of owls, a wolf cub awoke in the den and sent his tiny howl up toward the moon, feeling deep in his bones that his life would be one of courage and service. His mother woke and licked his fur, settling him back to sleep before he could disturb his littermates. He dreamed of being big and bold. He dreamed of leading the pack one day when he was grown. As she told of the young wolf growing up and watching his father and learning about keeping the balance for the pack, Alex and Lucas lifted the body of the slain wolf into the grave. The forest folk sang a soft, wordless melody, their music reflecting the course of the tale as the little wolf experienced fear and loss, love and opportunity. In time, he found his mate, who became leader. He fathered his own small ones. He was a protector, a wise elder. His wisdom and that of his beloved mate helped the pack through bitter winters, through times of storm, through the loss of a cub taken by a great eagle. She spoke, in the end, of his untimely passing. "I am sorry," she said, fighting back tears, "so deeply sorry, and I will be forever grateful to your kind. You saved our lives today, and more. From this act of courage may rise new hope. Your leader's sacrifice may help us to save the forest and all who dwell in it." The music came to an end. Kadri and Juho moved forward to fill in the grave. He had a wooden spade. She knelt and used her hands. "Rest well, brave spirit," Stasia said, "and to your pack, deepest respect. May you raise strong young. May you live your lives as he did, with courage and honor." The job was almost done. Kadri and Juho stepped back from the grave, and Flip, once more a dog, crept forward to hunker down at the edge of the disturbed soil and lay her muzzle on the ground as if in mourning. The wolves howled their lament, their voices ringing out through the forest. Their song was of both sadness and celebration, for this was not only a ritual of loss, but the recognition of a life lived well and to the full. Flip added a howl of her own. Perhaps only Stasia heard it. They retreated, then, human and forest folk together. Perhaps the wolves moved in once they were gone, to keep their own vigil at the gravesite. Perhaps they slipped away into the depths of the forest. Stasia never knew. It was curious indeed how short the path to the hermit seemed that day, proving again that the rules of the outer world did not apply in this realm of the forest folk. Nobody talked much along the way, and Stasia guessed that Alex had not yet told these people about the boy who had gone missing all those years ago, or asked whether a man of human lineage lived among them still. Those who had come to the rescue along with Kadri and Juho seemed to Stasia varied in appearance. Some, like Kadri, had features that marked them out clearly as something other than human. Those unusual eyes, or the strong bones of the face, or an indefinable difference in bearing. But some so closely resembled human men or women that it was only the green and brown of their loose tunics and trousers, and the use of leaves, vines, or flowers to hold back their flowing hair or to wear as decoration that indicated a difference. Now that her companions were clad in their borrowed clothes, she thought Carolus might easily pass for one of the forest folk. Perhaps she, too, could have passed for one of them. Mattis was bigger than any of their men. Lucas, with the tracking dog by his side, still seemed to her entirely of the human world, a man who belonged there with his own tribe. As for Alex, she could not imagine him as anyone but himself, a man with a purpose, a driven man, yet plagued by self-doubt. Why had he not yet asked that question? As they passed along forest tracks and walked by lonely lakes and climbed a precipitous, winding path up a rocky escarpment, she thought about the old tales in which so many travellers went missing in these parts, never to be seen again. Might not some of those missing folk have encountered these apparently peaceable people or their antecedents and chosen to live with them rather than return to the human world? Among the forest folk, might there not be some whose blood blended the human with the uncanny? That would be a tale full of possibilities. They reached the hermit before nightfall. Nobody commented on the oddities of distance. Wounded and exhausted as they were, relief outweighed all else. Mattis badly needed rest, proper rest, in a comfortable bed. Lucas was in pain again. Stasia saw through his efforts to hide it. The tracking dog had walked by his side all the way. Lucas had given him a new name, Shadow. Flip had spent most of the journey on Stasia's shoulder in the form of a wren. "Nearly there," Yuho said, as they hauled themselves up the last stretch. The stark, rocky heights of the hermit towered above them, but the place was softened by the trees that grew around its base, not pine and larch here, but gentler birch and willow, in which birds exchanged quiet observations. The path ended in a broad open area, clearly a gathering place. Under the trees that bordered it, Stasia glimpsed signs of a settlement, dwellings made from branches and woven foliage, a spot where there must be a freshwater spring, for there was a pool and stones placed for seating, and various scoops and jugs standing nearby. For a while, she was too breathless to speak. Alexis touched her gently on the shoulder. "Look," he murmured, pointing. His voice was full of wonder. There it was. The cave mouth of her visions, just as she had described it to her companions. And there was the old woman, clad in a robe the hue of birch leaves in springtime. Her white hair was in long plaits, and she wore a circlet of twigs and leaves. Her face was a map of age and wisdom. Her grey eyes were bright. "Come," Kadri murmured, gesturing for Stasia and Alexis to move forward. "Mother Rowan, here are the travellers. We made good time. There have been losses. Some are injured and all are weary." As Stasia approached with Alexis by her side, the crone had eyes only for her. She stretched out her arms in greeting. "Welcome, my dear." The warmth in her gaze and in her voice filled up Stasia's heart. "We have seen glimpses of your journey. A long way. A path of many challenges. You have been stalwart." She turned her head to look at Alexis. "And you, the seeker for truth. At last you are here. Welcome to you and to your companions." Stasia had seldom seen Alex lost for words, but now he seemed rooted to the spot, struck dumb, his gaze on Mother Rowan. You know me? You know..." His voice was so unsteady that Stasia feared he might collapse. She reached out to lay a reassuring hand on his arm. "It's all right. It's all right, Alex. We know of you, yes. And there is one among us who knows you, Alexis, son of Felix." A figure appeared behind the old woman. Stasia sucked in a breath. Again, the vision had become reality. A tall person in a hooded cloak. As she stared, and as Alex tensed beside her, the figure pushed back his hood. His was a face of great charm, handsome, open, a human face. "Alex," he exclaimed, and a joyful smile lit up his features. "You're the image of your father." "And you," Alexis breathed, "Lord Casimir reborn, and yet still truly yourself, my friend." Tears flooded his cheeks. The two moved forward and threw their arms around each other, and Stasia found that she, too, was weeping. Good tears. The tears a person sheds at the end of a wonderful tale of losing and finding, heartbreak and heart mending, sorrow and joy. This was a story beyond her skill to tell. Mother Rowan's smile was gentle. "There are many tales to be told here," she said. And Stasia wondered if the wise woman, for such Mother Rowan surely was, had the ability to read her thoughts, or was simply very good at seeing the truth in a situation. "Time enough for that later. Let us leave these two friends to renew their acquaintance in private. Travellers, you need rest. Yuho stepped forward to usher Mattis, Lucas, and Carolus away, under the trees, with the dog at Lucas's heel. Marcus put his arm around Alexis's shoulder, and the two of them followed. None of them looked back, and Stasia found herself feeling just a little sad. They don't need me anymore. Which was foolish. After the exhaustion, the fear, the deaths, the bloodshed, she should be feeling nothing but delight that the quest was over, the lost one found. You and I, Mother Rowan said, taking Stasia's arm, have much to discuss. The past, the present, the future. Weighty matters, and I have wonders to show you. But for now, let us spend some time in quiet reflection, just the two of us. Then you'll want to rest. You are weary in body and spirit, I think. A chirping comment from Flip, who still occupied Stasia's shoulder, made the wise woman chuckle. How could I forget you? The three of us, of course, she said with a wry smile, giving a nod in the bird's direction. You two have acquitted yourself well, young one. Was it possible that Flip belonged here among the forest folk? That she had been sent to Stasia on some kind of mission? Surely not. Years had passed since the day she'd discovered the little dog trapped in the forest and rescued her. It didn't make sense. Perhaps the wise woman was referring only to what she'd seen in visions. Flip changing her form, Flip saving lives, Flip comforting Stasia. She had most certainly acquitted herself well. Those times of hesitation and reluctance were no more than anyone might have felt on such a confronting journey. You'd rather be outdoors, I imagine, on your own, Mother Rowan said. Travelling with a bunch of men, you'll have missed your quiet time under the trees. But this is the hour for biting insects, so we'd best retreat inside. Most of our folk live out in the forest, but my dwelling is within the caves. I have room for you there, and the little one, of course. A private corner. Come, I'll show you. There were so many questions to ask. Stasia did not know where to start, or what might perhaps cause offence. The private corner proved to be quite a spacious cavern, with a hearth on which a small fire burned. The smoke did not fill the chamber, but rose through what looked like a natural chimney within the rock ceiling. There were two shelf beds, each with a straw mattress and neatly folded blankets, an oak dresser holding pots, cups, bowls, and other useful items, garments hanging from pegs attached to the stone wall. Bunches of dried herbs dangled from a natural protrusion high above them, surely too high to be reached by anyone who could not fly. Two cushioned chairs stood by a small oak table. It was a home. It felt almost like her own home, back on the fringe of Heartwood. It lacked only the picture of Mother and her creatures. But in a sense, Mother was here. That was how it felt. Flip, a little dog again, leaped onto one of the beds and curled up, making herself comfortable. Mother Rowan had busied herself, filling cups from a flask. She handed one to Stasia. This is a very fine mead, not made by me. There's a skillful brewer among the folk here. Ilona is her name, and she makes excellent use of what the seasons offer us. Sip slowly. It's quite strong, and you are tired. Thank you. It was indeed strong. One sip, and Stasia's mind filled with the warmth of summer, and bees working around a hive, and fruit ripening on trees. It is so good to be here, Mother Rowan. I feel as if you are an old friend, or even family, but I've never met you before. Stasia felt her cheeks grow hot. Why had she blurted that out when this was someone important? A wise woman among the forest folk, and she was... Sorry, she mumbled. I don't mean to be... honest? Mother Rowan was smiling again. You have met me before, Stasia. In your visions. Unless I am wrong in thinking you saw me there. I only wish my own visions had revealed a little more. In time, perhaps you will tell me your story. You have remarkable gifts, my dear. More powerful than you realize, I think. Who taught you to conjure visions in the fire and water? My grandmother. If she had lived longer, I might have learned better control over the other thing. The link with creatures. Maybe you saw, when I call on creatures for help, I only do that when things are desperate. They can end up suffering, even dying because they came to my aid. Oh, gods, now she was crying again. Sorry, she dashed away the tears. We were followed and there was a fight on the way here, a terrible, fierce fight. I called on wolves to help us and one of them was brutally killed. My fault. It's not the first time my gift has caused terrible harm. In her mind was the sound of boots kicking and trampling as the ruler's men crushed those rats to death. Grandmother died when I was 11. I was on my own after that, and I haven't always got things right. There was a silence. Stasia sipped her mead. From outside, faintly, came the sound of someone singing. What was your grandmother's name, Stasia? The question was gently put. Helvi. She was a storyteller. I learned that from her, too. I was sent to live with her in Hartwood when I was 4 years old. I don't remember my parents. Mm-hmm. So there is an untold story there. Have you wished to know more about them? Tried to find out? Stasia shook her head. They're gone. Dead. Grandmother never spoke of them, whatever their story was. I think it made her sad, and there was nobody else to ask. She met the wise woman's gaze. Maybe we both have questions, she said, and felt herself smiling. Maybe we do. And since you and your fellow travellers are not only worn out but also injured, it will be necessary for you to stay with us some while, until all are mended well enough to attempt the journey back. You and I have time to talk. I might, if you wish, teach you some further controls over your gift. More than that, if you wish. For now, I have something to show you. But first, perhaps one question each? What is most pressing, my dear? Where to start? Flip, Alex, the forest, the ruler, the whole woeful situation at court. Impossible to choose from those. It's a personal question, she said. Don't answer if you prefer not to, but are you one of the forest folk yourself? Or are you fully human? It's just, in some ways, you remind me of my grandmother. I feel safe here, with you. I haven't felt truly safe for a long while. That is hard to answer. I have lived many years among the forest folk. My heart lies here. My true calling lies here. I grew up among human folk. Like you, I chose to come here. Perhaps as a newborn babe I was human. As an old woman I am more than that, I believe. That was another story, a mysterious, almost magical one. Stasia was not sure she understood it, not fully. Perhaps that would take time. And so could you be, Stasia, said Mother Rowan. You have the makings of a wise woman already. Should you choose to stay here among us, I would guide you along the path of learning. The folk of this community would introduce you to wonders you would never encounter in the outside world. Deep wisdom. Understanding beyond words. How wonderful. How blissful to live here in the heart of the forest, among these calm and understanding folk, with a kind friend and wise teacher. But would there be a purpose beyond gaining wisdom and skills? Would I then go back to the human world? She imagined returning to Hartwood after 10 years, 20 years, for surely this path of learning would be long. If folk had suspected her of witchcraft before, how much more likely would that be after living among uncanny folk? It would be as if she had suddenly stepped out from one of those old tales. They'd drown her, burn her, destroy her. "I have a purpose here," said Mother Rowan. "I'm known as the Forest Guardian. My work is to watch over Hartwood Forest, to guide folk in understanding its special nature and how best to learn from it and look after it, and to share the wisdom of storytelling. We can speak more of this later, and there are some among the forest folk who will be happy to give you their understanding about what I do, about what they do. We play a part in the outer world, the human world as well. But I do not go beyond the borders of this land these days. I'm growing older." It was almost too much to take in. "So the forest folk do cross those borders sometimes, go out among human folk." Stasia could only imagine the risks that would bring when there was such distrust out there. "But then there were some among the forest folk who might pass as human men and women." She imagined them at Dragon's Keep, and what terrible things Lady Elizabetta might do if she discovered their true nature. Mother Rune smiled. "Your one question became several, Stasia. I think it's my turn now." "Oh, sorry." "My question is this," said Mother Rowan. "Who made your amber owl?" A simple, easy question was not at all what Stasia had expected. She reached to touch the owl, which hung outside her borrowed tunic. "Lucas, my friend from home who came with us here. He and I found the amber in a lake we call Clearwater, and he carved the owl from it." She noticed then that Mother Rowan also wore an amber token around her neck. It was a bird in flight, perhaps a swallow, delicately crafted. "But Lucas did not provide that silver chain, I imagine." "It's a long story. After the ruler's men came to our village, my owl was taken, first by the man they called the commander, and later by Lady Elizabetta, the ruler. Alex, Master Alexis, got it back for me before we left court. When he returned it, he provided the chain. The original cord was broken when the commander, when he... You need not tell that part. I know the man was brutal. The ill work he did in your settlement will take some mending." "There are good folk there," Stasia said. "But they lost so much. So many people dead or injured, terrible damage from the fire, and the trees. He made the men cut down the ancestor. He killed her. She'd stood watch over our village for longer than anyone could remember. She'd provided a home for more creatures than anyone could count. I don't know how that can ever be made good again, Mother Rowan." "We will speak more of this, and of your friend Lucas. For I think he is one of those who might make difference in the village, and perhaps in that part of the forest. A true friend, one who has listened to you and learned from you. A good man. He was brave on the journey, but he's hurt, though he doesn't like to admit it." Stasia would always remember Lucas drawing the knife across the commander's throat, and the strange calm in his voice as he spoke those words. She would always remember the hideous moment when she'd realized he was the one the ruler had threatened to whip to death. Sometimes it was hard to recall the peaceful moments in the field, the goats quietly grazing, the stories shared. Lucas would never have chosen to come here, even though he loves the old tales of uncanny things. He wanted to go home, to be with his family. But if Alex and his friends hadn't got us out of Dragon's Keep, Lucas would have been killed. Cruelly killed. It wasn't safe for him to go back to the settlement then, with the commander still there, so he came on with us. Thinking to protect you, perhaps. Perhaps, even though there were 3 court guards with us. He didn't trust Alex, Master Alexis. I don't think he does even now. And you? Do you trust him? Stasia wondered what Alex and Marcus were talking about now. Such a long time. So many years apart. They'd only been children. What if Marcus didn't want to leave this peaceful haven? What if he had no interest in becoming ruler of the Northlands? Even if he did say yes, what lay ahead would be hard. Lady Elisabetta was formidable. Alex kept the most important parts of his story secret from Lucas and me, she said. He wouldn't explain his reasons for wanting to come to the hermit while he thought someone might overhear and take information back to the ruler. So I doubted him, even though he'd saved our lives. I suspected he wanted me on the journey only to guide him safely through the forest so he could claim the treasure the old tales speak of. After a long time, he told the full story about losing his friend as a child and about who Marcus really is. By then I'd learned to trust him anyway. I can see he's a good person. He's driven by his mission, but he also cares about his friends. He cares about the Northlands and making it a better place. I'm happy you found Marcus here among your people, but I don't know what will come next, except that it will be dangerous and difficult for all of them. Silence then. Mother Rowan was looking at her as if she expected something more, but there was no more to say. Eventually the wise woman said, "Come then. Before you rest, let me show you what lies within and beyond this dwelling place. The tales do indeed tell of treasure hidden here, guarded by unknown forces. We have neither sleeping dragons nor fearsome fey warriors, though our folk can take on that role if required. The secret nature of our realm has been protection enough. Human folk seldom step past the barrier unless we choose to let them in. Thus it was with young Marcus, a human child found deep in Heartwood all alone. He had spent many days wandering, drinking from forest pools, eating what little he could find. One of the forest folk, out on a mission far beyond our border, came upon the boy in a place frequented by bears and brought him back here. The child was too exhausted, too frightened to tell us who he was and where he had come from. While he recovered within our community, I sought answers in the water and in the fire. What I saw convinced me that he should stay with us, learn what the young people of the forest folk learn, discover ways of wisdom and paths of peace. I saw that he was destined to be a leader among human folk, but only if we strengthened him, taught him to hear the voices of the trees, the rocks, the creatures of forest and lake, would he grow strong and wise and courageous enough to be not only a good leader, but a great one. Great in justice and wisdom, great in forbearance, in tolerance, in his embrace of all living things. It was hard to know what to say, so Stasia held her tongue. Lord Casimir had lived the rest of his life believing his only son dead. People had searched long and hard for Marcus. Alex had bore the burdens of guilt and sorrow all these years. The decision to keep the child, a boy even younger than poor Thomas, seemed cruel, though the intentions had been good. If Alex were here, he would ask the hard question. He would not hesitate. Perhaps he had already asked Marcus. She wished she could hear that conversation. "Come," Mother Rowan said, rising to her feet and gesturing toward an opening in the wall where a passageway seemed to lead directly into the mountain. "Will you bring the lantern? It's quite dark on the way in. Leave the little one to her sleep." Flip twitched an ear, then curled herself still tighter on the bed. Stasia took up the lantern and followed the old woman along the curving tunnel through the rock. The roof was high. Even Mattis would be able to pass through without stooping. Had this place been laboriously carved out by hand, made by magic? Or perhaps it had formed naturally over the course of more years than anyone could count. There were trees here once, in another age, Mother Rowan said. Great, wonderful trees, something like the one you called the Ancestor. Such things they witnessed in their long lives. The fall of kings, the deeds of heroes, the passing away of tribes and the grief of survivors. Courage and cowardice, justice and tyranny, love and hate. No wonder old trees are so full of wisdom. This way now, watch your step. The rock floor was uneven here. Mother Rowan was walking ahead of her while Stasia held the light, but the old woman seemed to have no trouble finding her way or staying steady. Well, she had said she was something other than human now. Perhaps finding her way in the semi-dark was a skill she had come by during her long life among the forest folk. The passageway opened up, and they were in a larger cavern, where there was natural light. Something whirred past overhead, making Stasia start. Bats, she thought, smiling as she gazed upward. There they were, hanging neatly in groups, their dark forms like shadows in corners of the cavern roof. The one that had taken flight settled again. Stasia opened her thoughts to them, sent a message in mind pictures. We come in friendship. We mean you no harm. Rest well, small ones. And felt the faintest response, like a contented sigh. Rest. Sleep. The light came from a narrow gap where the stone opened to the outside world. Through that opening came a faint sound of birdsong, a twilight conversation. Closer at hand, Stasia could hear a trickle of water. Set the lantern down over there, Mother Rowan gestured, and Stasia saw there was a pool in the cavern, small and round, the water touched by the light from above. She put the lantern down where she was shown by the wall and came to stand beside the wise woman, looking into the water. A place of visions, she said. Is this where you... One of the places, yes. We will try together, but not now. You are weary. It can be hard to find the right questions at such times. I have something else to show you. Look up, above the lantern. What do you see? How had she not noticed it before? Her mouth dropped open. She blinked and looked again. The cave wall, illuminated from below by the soft light, was golden, glowing, rich as fine clover honey. Stasia stepped closer. She held back from touching. To do so would seem almost like sacrilege. Amber, she breathed. Gods, if Lady Elisabetta ever found out about this, she would wreak absolute havoc on the mountain. Fire-breathing dragons would not be enough to hold her back. Indeed. And not only in this cave, Stasia. Amber is found in many places within the hermit. The rocks hold a honeycomb of chambers and passageways. Guarding them is part of our people's ancient trust. If we take from the store of amber, it is always with the forest's permission and with due ritual of thanks. And never for selfish reasons. This amber heals. It protects. It guards. But only if it is both taken and worn in the right spirit. Stasia's hand went around her amber owl, gently, in recognition and thanks. She could find no words. We will sleep now, Mother Rowan said. I'll show you where we go to relieve ourselves and where we wash. That's close by and entirely private. Then rest until morning. We might seek answers in the water then. Later in the day, there will be a gathering to celebrate the arrival of your party. A feast, singing, an exchange of stories, but only when all of you are well rested and able to join in. Don't look so worried, my dear. It will be a joyful gathering. You might be invited to contribute a story. Nothing more would be asked of you. The folk here know you walk under my special protection now. Really? The idea seemed at the same time unbelievable and entirely right. Mother Rowan saw in her the next forest guardian, an apprentice, a student on a very long path of learning, if she chose that way. Yes, really. Now come, I'll show you where to wash. You look half asleep on your feet. I expect the bats are waiting for us to retire before they fly out on the hunt, Stasia said, as they returned to the dwelling place. She could sense it. The air was alive with their need to be on their wing. Mother Rowan glanced back at her. I expect so, she said with a grin. They are a little late to leave. 46. Alexis. This must have taken years of preparation, Marcus said, and a great deal of caution, when a single error might have drawn the whole plan to my cousin's attention. They were under the trees in the half-light of evening, Marcus with the three of them, enjoying some very good mead, while Alexis attempted to explain the situation concisely and clearly. Why was it so hard to summon that voice now, the measured voice of the royal adviser? Marcus would think him incompetent. He might say no to coming back. Mattis kept glancing his way. The big man knew him well, and now Mattis spoke in his stead. We have many loyal folk within the ruler's household, Marcus. Among the guards, in the kitchens, the gardens, the stables, one or two key folk in senior trusted positions, and many more out in the community, though that network is harder to maintain safely. We couldn't, keep travelling out to talk to folk, to exchange information, and we didn't want to risk messages by pigeon, though we do have birds in certain households, and we must use them when we must. We have a network of safe houses. If not for that, our flight from court would have been far more difficult, and we've placed some of our folk in strategic locations, places where they may gain information not available elsewhere, a broad reach. It has taken time, yes, but not years. Lady Elisabetta has not been ruler so long. A pity we were never able to place a spy with Bishop Petrus at Raven's Watch, put in Carolus, or in one of the other houses of his order. We judge that simply too perilous. The Church of the Godly wields significant power, second only to that of the ruler, and since Petrus became bishop, its power is still greater. He is a man of enormous ambition. I don't remember much about the warrior monks. Marcus's voice was low, warm. They did visit court once, long ago. I recall the tricks they did with their swords and the combat displays they put on. As a child, I found them dazzling. A pause. Strange, the things I quickly remembered, while barely understanding what they were, and the things that came back much later, aided by visions that were not my own. To know you were coming to find me, Alex, and wondering why now. The news of my father's passing came from the outside world. A message reached us. I knew there was unrest, but I had not expected to be called upon. I'm ill prepared for it. I know little of the wider picture. Borders, leaders, what the people truly want. The warrior monks must be a formidable fighting force. I fear that this bishop might challenge my claim to the rulership, valid though it would seem to be. It would be deeply wrong to achieve this at the cost of more lives, perhaps to face an armed conflict within the Northlands. That would defeat the purpose. My father's wish was to lead in peace, to open his ears to the voices of the people, to serve them rather than to rule them, and I imagine to maintain friendly relations with our neighbouring territories. If our venture began with bloodshed, my time as ruler would be forever tainted. Your father knew how to deal with Petrus. Alex had got his voice under control again. Lady Elisabetta lacks the required subtlety. I don't think she reads him well, and he, of course, does not believe women have what it takes to hold positions of leadership. We can't charge straight into this, said Carolus. If you agree to come back with us, Marcus, we'll need to keep you under cover, hidden, for some while. We thought you might stay with someone who can prepare you. There's a trusted scholar of our acquaintance, a man with an extensive personal library and an immense knowledge of the Northlands, our neighbouring territories, and history, both recent and ancient. You'd be safe there. He's an ally. His dwelling is nowhere near court, and it can be kept secure. As for the rest of us, we cannot reappear at Dragon's Keep, or anywhere Elisabetta might track us down, until everything is in readiness. But we will continue to work toward that day, all of us. That includes those of our team who are at present out in the community playing their own parts. What of the others who came here with you? Marcus asked. The young man, Lucas, and the woman? What part do they play in your grand plan? Mattis was about to speak, then clearly thought better of it. All eyes were on Alexis. That's for each of them to say. Why did this feel like an admission of defeat? Why did it make his heart shrink? Lucas has made it clear he wants to go back to Hartwood. He has family there, but he's carrying an injury. Carolus has been helping him as we travelled. I understand your healers here will provide further treatment. They said he would spend tonight in their house. He needs to be completely well before he can attempt the journey home, and he shouldn't go to Hartwood until the ruler's men have been withdrawn. Elisabetta will very likely want to keep a force there, even with the commander gone. Who knows what story will be attached to his disappearance, along with a number of his men. One thing is certain, I can play no part in that situation. Whatever authority I held was gone the moment we left court. A few misleading messages might help, Mattis suggested. There would be ways of doing it, but you're right. We should make sure Lucas doesn't go back until it's safe for him to be there. He may have been a reluctant member of our team, but he's acquitted himself bravely. We owe him for that. He'll want Stasia to go with him, Carolus stated the blunt truth. He'll expect it. Silence. Then Alexis drew a deep breath and said, That's her decision to make. Whatever their choices, we must ensure their safety on the journey, and perhaps maintain some protection until the two of them settle. I'm hoping that... He looked at Marcus, who was regarding him with a half-smile, as if both puzzled and amused. You will travel under the protection of the forest folk, his friend said. At least while you are in Hartwood Forest. All of you. As for the future, its pathways are numerous and changeable. How soon had you hoped to make news of my return public, Alex? When would I step up and identify myself to my cousin? I had hoped we might do it at the Grand Council, when the leaders of our neighbouring territories will be gathered at Dragon's Keep, along with Bishop Petrus. The time of the Harvest Festival. That gives us the summer to prepare. Marcus lifted his brows. The longer the preparation, the more likely it is that information will leak to the wrong ears, and the greater the possibility that one of you, or us, will be recognised, my friend. A disguise goes only so far. Could it not be sooner? We must get it right, Alexis said. Part of that is to spread the message among ordinary people, the people whose lives will be changed if they have a wise ruler, someone who will lead in the same spirit of justice and tolerance your father lived by. No secrets exposed, no grand plans announced until the council. Instead, something much simpler and more palatable. We have an idea about that, too, or rather, Carolus does. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. I see Yuho hovering. It must be past time for sleep. He was tired beyond exhaustion, worn out in body and mind, but sleep eluded him. The three of them had been housed in one of the leafy dwellings within the forest, and now lay under a roof of branches and greenery, on pallets that were sheer luxury after so many nights spent on rocks or bare ground. He was clean.